When we first heard we'd be self-isolating at home, we thought, great, we'll get all those things done, learn new skills, and share time with the loves of our lives. However, the reality has been not quite what we expected. Instead, we become championship nappers, stress eaters, and we're sharing so much love, it's suffocating.
Today, wellness consultant Michelle Kanon joins us to talk about being together 24/7 during the coronavirus pandemic with your lover or just the folks in your home. For years, Michelle has worked with strong women to stop trying to take control of everything in their relationship so they can have a very sexy and satisfying marriage. And she has a lot to say on how any couple or friends can survive for long periods of time being isolated together.
Plus, the three toxic habits of highly regressive people.
Comedian Tracy Morgan says he's into role-playing with his wife, pretending to be a scientist who discovered a cure for coronavirus.
And Zac Efron says he's glad he got into killer shape for Baywatch, so he'll never have to do it again. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you. Thank you.
For an ad-free experience, go to patreon.com/feastoffun or access thousands of legendary podcasts at feastoffun.com/plus.
Hello.
Hi, is this Michelle Kanon?
Yes, it is me. Who's this?
Hi, this is Fausto.
And Mark from Feast of Fun. How are you doing today?
Yay, I'm so good. Thank you for rescuing me from my quarantine.
And your husband.
A temporary reprieve.
Well, you're actually rescuing him because now I'm busy with you guys.
we're taking the heat off of him.
Yeah, you're giving him his birthday present because today's his birthday. So now he gets some
alone time. Happy birthday to him.
Oh my God. What's your husband's name?
His name is Dan.
Hi, Dan.
How do you celebrate a birthday? Because Fausto's birthday is coming up next week. And I'm just like, what am I going to do for him for his birthday during the quarantine lockdown?
Yeah, it took me a while to figure out what would be like the present. And I don't want to set the standard too high, but he is going to get a 60-minute full body massage later today.
Ooh, does he know what's coming?
Yes, I did let him know that.
Is it from you or from another
woman? It's from me. No. No, I mean, maybe if we weren't in quarantine, it might be more exciting, but it's going to be from me, so.
Well, that's so wonderful. And how thoughtful of a present that is. Unless you're terrible at giving massages.
No, actually, I'm amazing at it. I'm trained as a somatic therapist and practitioner, so I really know how to use my hands and how to get things out of people's bodies, so to speak.
So do you see yourself primarily as a healer?
Not primarily. It's one of my many gifts and talents. I'm a mom. I'm a wife. We're actually a business partner, so I'm a co-founder. I'm also a healer. I'm a power guide. I do so many different things, but healing is one of the beautiful things that I get to do in this world.
Because one thing I noticed at looking at your website, which I really like, is that you consult and work with strong women to stop taking control of everything in their relationship so they can have sexy and satisfying marriages with the men or women in their lives.
Yes, that's right.
So what is the quality aggressive people in relationships all share in common?
I don't know if you know the term bossy bottom, but I was definitely a bossy bottom.
Yes, we know that term very well.
Yes. Yeah, so I kind of had like a thing, right, where I just used to, you know, say that I wanted like a real man and wanted like someone that I could lean on and that would support me. And then in actuality, I did everything to undermine every boyfriend that I ever had, every masculine presence in my life. I strong-armed them. I bossed them around with my opinions. I negged them. I just totally got in the way of them, like really standing in their masculine power. And with my husband, I realized that I can't do that to the man that I love, the person that I'm committed to. And he let me know that I can't do that either. So I had to take a look in the mirror and make a lot of changes. And so my clients, my female clients, they're going through that same struggle too, where they're out of balance with their masculine and feminine energies. And they're really looking to let go of that like death grip of being in control and let somebody else take the reins every once in a while.
Isn't gender just an illusion, though? And aren't these roles that we're playing just kind of made up in our heads?
1,000% I'm actually not talking about gender. I'm talking about energetics, and masculine and feminine energy as like a representation of different ways of being or feeling or expressing, but it actually doesn't have anything to do with gender.
So you're thinking more like yin-yang.
Yeah, you could call it yin-yang. And I think there's a lot of different ways to talk about it. I think the way that I talk about it can be interpreted as gendered, but I think we're all on that spectrum and we all have different balances of masculine and feminine energy. And we need those different energetics inside of us to do and appreciate and experience different things. It's just, when do you want to call on those different aspects in order to experience what you want to experience in this life?
So at what point in your advice to these women, you tell them to tell their husbands to put on a negligee?
Well, I've actually never said that advice. And I don't think I've ever taken that advice either. I mean, you can be very feminine no matter what you dress like, and you can rely on your masculine energy and your dominance, like no matter what you look like or who you are in this world, you know? So I have never thought about that kind of outward advice or guidance. It's really about playing with your energy and understanding, like, what's your goal? How do you want your relationship to be? And then, are you showing up in service to that, or are you actually, you know, sabotaging it through your actions or through your reactions?
There's a quote that you like to put out there. You said, "You might find that if you stop getting high off your own big dick energy, your husband will give you his."
You like that one?
I do. In some ways, you know, part of it is like, I see myself as a feminist, and I want to create opportunities for women in every job that I have to be in leadership positions. But one thing that for people who are marginalized, which is LGBT people or women or people from different cultures and experiences, is that what we think a good leader isn't bossing people around, but it's actually being in a position of service.
Yeah, I think that being a leader, you would have lots of different kinds of qualities. And ultimately, I think you're so right that being of service, a lot of times we don't understand, and this is my own personal experience too, the pleasure and the fulfillment that you can get from serving another, especially when it's your partner, you know, the person that you're committed to, that you really want to see happy, that you want them to be like living their best life and really fulfilled. And for a very long time, I didn't realize that. Like, everything that I was doing was in my service, was about my happiness and about me getting what I want. And it took me many years actually into our relationship to realize the pleasure in service and the pleasure in, giving to my man, to my partner. And a lot of that was actually, rather than giving more, doing more, pushing more, hustling more, how can I actually step back and step away so that I can create the space for him to just have what he wants or be who he wants to be or do what he needs to do without me cock blocking him, so to speak, or energetically getting in his way.
I love that you use the language bossy bottom, cock blocking. You're like
big energy.
Really aligned with us here.
I knew that we were going to have a good conversation when we ended up speaking. I wasn't worried about that at all. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, this is a choice. Like, we live in a time when we can choose, you know, how we want to live and what roles we want to play and how we want to show up in our relationship. So nothing I'm talking about is how you have to be or what you should be doing. It's just, if you're not getting the results that you want, or you're not having the relationship vibes that you crave, you know, how do you just take a look at yourself and say, like, okay, what's my part in this dynamic? And am I actually empowering what I say that I want or not?
From what I'm getting from you is, like, a lot of it is like giving up control over certain things. If you're trying to have a good relationship and allowing this other person to have some kind of control over things.
It could be. It could be if you're stifling your partner, or you're not like letting him or her have that kind of control, and that they could be really empowered, or they could really do something with it. Like, it's not only a gift for your partner what you're doing, but it's also a gift for yourself, because being in control all the time is freaking exhausting, you know, like being the one to always make the decisions and to run the show and organize the schedule and just like keep track of everything and keep everything running. It's really tiring. caring. And I know from my personal experience and a lot from the women that I work with, they feel like they have to do that in order to keep things moving. Mm-hmm. But it's actually not true. And so there's a lot of fear, like, you know, the fear of letting go of control. And I don't mean to bring S&M into this, but you know, that kind of stuff.
Please bring S&M into
well,
this.
Well, I'm definitely not an expert in S&M, but right? A lot of, you know, those are safe spaces, mm-hmm. where people can play with letting go of control or taking control, because, you know, it really creates a different kind of energy. It can really give you something. So, so it's interesting that that's a world where this kind of interplay of control or letting go of control is more accepted, and in mainstream society, it not necessarily so. But I think that's starting to change.
Well, how do you take those baby steps into like kind of like giving up some of that control? Because I know for some people, it's just like they're afraid if they give like an inch that somebody's going to take a yard or a mile, and the next thing they know, everything's just going to go to hell.
Well, I think that it's important to recognize, like, if you have a safe space in your relationship. So if you're in a healthy relationship, if you're in a relationship where you trust the other person and you guys can come together to create a vision for a relationship and how you want it to be, and then you can play within the, I was going to say the confines, it's not the confines, but within the boundaries or the sandbox of your relationship. Mm-hmm. And you can start with different things. And honestly, you know, most people think that they have to do this with their partner. Like they have to get their partner on board or drag them along for the ride. But it's the changes that you can make within yourself that will create that ripple effect and allow your partner to start showing up differently. And they'll start to notice like that something feels different or you're different. They might not be able to put their finger on it right away. But if you're committed to, you know, giving your partner back their power and balancing out the relationship, then where are those places in your relationship where you're like, you know what, I'm going to take a step back here, or I'm not going to like automatically take control or take responsibility or volunteer myself for this assignment, or I'm just going to let it lie for a little bit and see what happens next.
Mm. One key advice that I always offer couples who are struggling in their relationship is, especially for same-sex couples or non-binary or non-traditional couples or truples even, is that sex eventually is not enough to glue you together. Mm. And I always observe that happy, fulfilled relationships create things together. And not just children, but like not in terms of like consuming something, you know, is not creating. And I think for Americans, we have a really hard time understanding what it means to build something with someone you love.
Yeah. You know, we do live in a consumer society in terms of how we, of what we ingest and how we take things in. And at the same time, I do recognize in what you're saying, I never thought about this before, the pleasure that me and my partner take in the things that we've created together and like the life that we've built together and like the ways that we've both shown up in our relationship and in our lives and in our business. So I can really feel into what you're saying. I agree.
Well, that's why I know you're not full of shit, because you and your husband run a business together.
Oh my God. Lord help us.
And part of it is, you know, in the coronavirus pandemic, it's more important than ever to, one, build healthy relationships with your roommate, with your friends, whoever, your husband, your wife, your spouse, whoever you're sharing this this self-isolated space with. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's also very distressing for a lot of Americans who are very tied to consumer culture to all of a sudden be like, I can't go shopping anymore unless it's for food.
Yeah, and even that, I think they just said that you guys should stop going to supermarkets and pharmacies if you can. But I think that, you know, I think that with any kind of change, there's always going to be struggle or resistance in the beginning, because it goes back to that control thing where like everything's predictable, you know how things work, like, and suddenly the rules are changed and the boundaries are different and you can't just run an autopilot anymore. So it can feel hard or it can feel uncomfortable. But I'm just so pleased to see, I don't know if you guys see it, just like the simple pleasures that people are doing, like just sitting outside on their front steps if they can, you know, or just like sticking their heads out the window for a breath of fresh air. Like, you know, when those kinds of boundaries, or suddenly we're not allowed to have all the creature comforts or the things that we used to rely on, we're going to develop new patterns. And while it might feel hard, there's also, I think, a lot of good stuff that's going to come out of it too. You know, and I understand that there's privilege that comes into it, and not everybody will be experiencing that in the same way. But you have to look for those silver linings, those good things, or it's so easy to be overwhelmed by all the hard stuff that's going on right now.
Michelle, for people who are stuck with their partner, their spouse in a studio apartment.
Oh, Lord, yes.
That's a very difficult place to be. And I think, you know, we've talked to on this podcast to people who are in jail, not prison. Mm-hmm. A little callback there. That they said that being incarcerated with somebody is a very similar experience, that at the beginning, it's very hard to get along with someone. But if you're patient and flexible and a good listener, and if you're both into a state of being open to change, that you can get along with. So one thing I position to you is, like, what advice can you give to people who are stuck in a very small space like a studio apartment?
Yeah, I mean, we're New Yorkers. We have our apartment in Brooklyn, although we're not there right now. And I wrote an article about this for another website, and I've really been thinking about that, about our family, our friends, everybody that's still in New York. And what's really important is that you're able to create the sacred, I'm calling it sacred space, not just to be like holier than thou, but really that space for yourself, no matter what, even if you are in one room with somebody. Like I was looking at pictures of families in other countries, in China and the Philippines, that are like, everybody's in these tiny apartments that are full with all of their stuff, you know, their kitchen, their bathroom, their bedroom, it's all just in one room, you know? So first having that kind of perspective and that gratitude for what you do have is always something that is very grounding and just, you know, shows you the happiness that you can have with what you do have. But at the same time, how do you set up that space? It's, you know, even though you're in your same apartment, life's different now. Like the energy out there is different now. And so how can you set up or re-energize your apartment in a different way so that you can create the space that you need? And it could be that you're hanging literally a sheet from the ceiling so that you just have some kind of division. Or maybe it's noise canceling headphones, or maybe it's setting appointments in your calendars so that you have your time to do what you want to do, and the other person that's in that apartment with you has their time to do what they need to do. Like, how do you create the space that you need and not be apologetic about it? Just, you know, it's a need, and it's something that is going to allow you to reset your nervous system and to allow you to emerge and then reconnect with the people that you're quarantining with. So it's vital that we're doing that for ourselves, that we're really taking and making that space and holding it sacred so that it's yours. You know, people can't push into it. Like, you have your boundaries, and then you're really taking care of yourself in that way.
Part of it is there's a lot of sense of loss and sorrow. And I think in terms of our ability to navigate relationships with other people, we have a hard time listening to other people express negative feelings. Don't cry, honey. It's going to be all right. Or you're being so negative. You know, you gotta follow Oprah's The Secret. And and the reason that you're not able to pay your mortgage is because you're so negative. If you have a positive outlook, you'll be able to pay your mortgage. You know, and I think that giving space to people to express those negative feelings opens up a possibility to learn from those experiences and grow emotionally, so you're more resilient towards challenges as they present themselves in your future. And I think it actually helps you bond together, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I would even remove the labels of positive and negative, because I think in our society, and when I say our society, I'm going to say in America, because like I've lived in other countries and I've studied different healing modalities in Europe, and the labeling of things like sadness or anger or frustration or pain as negative really gives it this cloud or this lens that, like, oh, we shouldn't be feeling those things and we shouldn't be spending time in those places. Like, we need to move through and out of them.
But I like this when you're, a lot.
Yeah, when you're doing that, though, you're not giving yourself the full permission to experience the breadth of human experience, you know, like, and as much as you can feel happiness and joy and pleasure is as much as you can feel all this stuff on the other end of the spectrum. Because to us in our minds, we've identified what's good and bad and what's wrong and right. But really our emotions are just energetic impulses that are running through our body that we've assigned these labels to. And so maybe we're better at, or society has let us know that it's okay to feel the quote unquote good ones and that we need to cover up the other ones. So maybe we're just not as comfortable knowing how to process the ones that feel more difficult or the ones that other people have deemed wrong or negative. So it's so crucial that we build that muscle, or that we allow ourselves to really move through, not even just pass over or spiritually bypass over things like sadness or grief or frustration, because that's just real, you know, and we all have those experiences. And especially with going on in the world right now, I mean, gratitude is a great tool. And at the same time, if you're using it to avoid feeling the reality of what's going on with you and the world right now, it becomes a detriment in that kind of way. So, so while you're in your, you know, in your alone time and your sacred self-care space, maybe you're doing primal screaming. I know that I am. maybe you're listening to Rage Against the Machine and your headphones and just thrashing just to move your body and to process whatever is real, that real experience that you're having.
You know, I've been revisiting Cats the Musical.
Horrific.
Okay.
Embracing the Heart. Well, because the film was so terrible, and it was such a betrayal of people who love the Broadway musical Cats by Andrew Lloyd Webber. And part of it was like, is this CGI Uncanny Valley nightmare? Anyways, I started listening to the music, not watching the film, and I felt a sense of like happiness and joy that I haven't felt in a while. And part of it is like allowing myself to get lost in this ridiculous, kooky world created by these hungry Broadway actors and celebrities, and not worry about the physical struggles of paying my bills, or you know, worrying about getting sick, or worrying about the future and the lives of my friends and family. It's like, and so in a lot of ways, I think, you know, entertainment and music is playing a bigger role in our lives more than ever.
Yeah. I was reading online, someone was saying like, you know, for everyone that thought that artists and musicians and writers weren't important, like what would your quarantine experience be like now if those people didn't exist? And, yeah. And I think what came up for me while you were talking is, a lot of what we've been talking about in this conversation together is for each person to be able to get really clear on what we need and to be able to take personal responsibility and give that to ourselves. So if it's that we want to feel joy, like what can we tap into that's going to bring us joy? And if we're feeling messed up, you know, what is the outlet that we can create for ourselves that's going to allow us to express it, you know, and that we can resource ourselves as long as we make the decision to fully listen and tap in. And I think that's actually one of the biggest new experiences for a lot of people, is now that we're quote unquote trapped in this way, right? Like we don't have all of our to-do lists. We don't have our job that keeps us occupied for dozens of hours a day. Like we're not in our commute. Like we're in a way really sitting with ourselves for the first time, you know, and really being confronted with all of that stuff. Because also in addition, everything, the chaos of what's going on in the world is totally triggering the shit out of all of us right now, you know? So a lot of that stuff is coming up for us to deal with. And it's not wrong. Again, it's not bad. It's not negative. It just is what it is. And it's that opportunity for us to really shift something inside of us.
Well, for people who are listening to this podcast, they're receptive, they're open to trying new ideas. And at least that state of mind is where I'd like to see everybody be, you know, not necessarily listening to Feast of Fun, but it's just being, asking the question, can I receive feedback? Can I change? Can I grow? Can I be of service? Tracy Morgan, the comedian, who's said a lot of controversial things in the past, and he's back in the news again.
But oh, for no. fun.
For fun, but he was, okay. You know, his comments on...
It's dark humor, right, in some ways.
He said he's pretending to be a scientist who's discovered a cure for coronavirus, and his wife is begging him to save her grandfather's lives, and is willing to do anything to save it. And I think, you know, in some ways, like, role-playing... A lot of people think about role-playing as this, you know... We think of it as the film Eyes Wide Shut, you know, this mm-hmm. very, very defined, very intentional, putting on a mask and you know, sadomasochism or something. And role-playing can be just being playful or flirtatious.
It can be a line or two lines yeah. just to kind
what
of
is the,
get
the
you
thing
in the mood.
That you and I do? I ask Mark, is like, what's your name? Because like, we pretend like we're
like,
at
I don't
home.
Know you. You're just some random guy I picked up at the supermarket.
Yeah, I was like, are you worried you're going to catch coronavirus? And we're kind of stuck at home, and Mark asks him what his name is.
Secret, what's yours?
And I was like, your name is Secret. Mm-hmm. That's a terrible name. But part of it is just getting into a state of play, to invite to be seen, to invite to be heard, to invite to be, you know, playful with the circumstances that you're in.
Yeah, I mean, it's so easy, right, to just like anxiety scroll on your phone, or to just like be so focused on preparing and reading the news and just focusing on what you don't have, you know. And so it you have to be intentional about bringing joy and bringing play, right? I mean, like, life is still worth living, even though it's very different right now. And at the same time, not feeling guilty for it. Like, because, yeah, you know, there's a lot of people that are suffering and a lot of people that are less fortunate than us. And still we are allowed to enjoy, and still we are allowed to have fun and to have days and experiences that really like fill us up, instead of just bring the energy down. Like, if that's the only thing that you can do, then that would even be a gift to the world, to be that kind of light, to bring that kind of joy to yourself. And then you'll bring it to other people when you're FaceTiming them, or you're on the house party app with them, or whatever it is. So I think that that's something that's really giving to yourself and to other people.
Well, and the most important way to give to yourself is to masturbate.
How do you do that when you're locked up with somebody?
And, you know, you're like, honey, I love having sex with you, but this is my, I need a little me time right now. And you're in that one studio apartment. I can only think of that. The only time you know, and this is a taboo that I think a lot of couples, especially couples in very traditional relationships, struggle with a lot, which they unconsciously believe they have some kind of ownership over the other person's body.
Wow. I don't know. I
what do you say about that, Michelle?
I hope that's not true. That's not what it's like in my relationship.
But you know what I'm talking about. It's like there's a lot of relationships, and the husband or the wife is mortified, furious when they catch their spouse masturbating without them. Even worse when they're looking at porn. And it's like, oh my God, how dare you? You know, it's like, that was supposed to be our time together.
But that's the thing. You know, anytime someone has a real problem with something that you're doing, you know, it's just like, okay, but what's it triggering for you? Like, what's the issue there for you? You know? And a lot of times it's not about the masturbation, or it's not about the porn, but it's about something else that's missing for that other person, another unfulfilled need, or like something that wasn't met inside of them. And I'd say overall that's the biggest issue, is that people are pretty shitty about communicating what they need to their partners in either a clear way or in a non-confrontational way that like invites their partner in as a partner to like, okay, cool, let's work on that together. Or in all honesty, a lot of times in relationships, people make their needs the responsibility of their partner, and that's selfish and also not true. You know, like if you need something, especially if you're going through like a big emotional thing, that's your responsibility to deal with. It's not your partner's responsibility to either make you happy or to, you know, submit to some rules that they've made up in their head about what they think relationships should be like.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, some people just like they put all their emotional responsibility onto somebody else and they don't take ownership of themselves. How do you shift out of that?
Well, you have to, like you're saying, as the person that's receiving that or the person that's doing that?
On either end, really.
I mean, the first thing with anything is recognition, right? Yeah. Like I know for me, one of the biggest turning points in my relationship was when I started asking myself the question, would I rather be right or would I rather be in love? And for most of my life, most of my relationships, and even for a long time in my current relationship and marriage, I was really focused on being right. I was focused on winning the argument, on getting my way, on, you know, having the idea for what it should be and then forcing everything to like fall in line. My priority and my focus wasn't on how to create more love, whether it's between my partner or now with our baby or just like to be in love, you know, my energy was going that other way. And so sometimes, of course, every partner is going to experience a time when their person is triggering the shit out of them or is, you know, doing something that belies their expectations. But in that moment, we always have a choice. Like, sure, you can get really pissed off and dump all over that person and, you know, or is there another way that you can react or communicate or, you know, take whatever comes up inside of you and remove it and deal with it so that you're not getting into another cycle of arguments or like another standoff or just like the same old pattern with the same old result time after time. All it takes is one person doing one thing different and that will change the pattern. Like any pattern is just two people, you know, doing the same thing over and over, or one person doing the same thing over and over again with no change.
So you got to rock the boat a little bit.
Yes, there's exactly, you know, and again, back to that thing where people are like, oh, that's good or it's bad. That's positive or it's negative. Like if we fight or if my partner reacts in that way and is displeased, then it's bad. I shouldn't have done that. No, you know, you're trying something new, you know, you're seeing what comes from it. You know, there's no bad, but if you want good or bad, but if you want to make a change, you have to do something different and start trying to figure out what that's going to be.
You know, it's interesting having this conversation about healthy relationships is at the core is love. And I think we don't really understand what love is. Mm-hmm. And we think about it in terms of, you know, television or films definition of it. But one thing that I've observed in the 15 years of doing this podcast and sort of looking closer at the type of personality attributes of harmful people. I don't want to say hateful people, but harmful people or conservative, toxic. There's three things that they all have in common, regardless if they're Republicans or Democrats or independent or whatever, is they have this idea of leadership is bossing or telling people what to do, and they're very uncomfortable in receiving instructions on what to do themselves. And then the second thing is they get into this fear-based mentality that if I don't do certain types of behavior, that something terrible is going to happen to me. But the third one, which I think is really interesting, is this idea of competitiveness, where regressive people share this attribute where if they see somebody, including their loved ones, including their spouse, having the exact same thing they have, they feel that what they have isn't as valuable anymore. So they'll go out of their way to deny other people the same pleasures that they have just because they're worried that the things that they have won't be as pleasurable anymore when they see other people sharing in that. And this goes, you know, to where we're talking about healthcare and universal basic income and down to the microcosm of, you know, sharing a slice of pie with your spouse.
That's so interesting. I never heard it fleshed out in those three buckets before, but when you were talking about the competitive nature, like I totally recognize that trait in me when I myself am energetically out of balance and when I'm relying too hard on my masculine driving energy. And again, let's take gender out of it. And I'm sorry that this is the only vocabulary that I know for how to explain it. But you know, when someone's deep in their masculine energy, and so this makes me think of the patriarchy and upholding the patriarchy and that whole structure, like it's everything is about winning or losing or about dominating or about like, you know, being first, you know, and getting ahead of other people, like only relying on the masculine energy means that like, if I am not first, then I'm a loser, you know? And so listening to you talk about those things, I can really see how those, you know, you call them regressive kind of people. It's almost like they're out of whack energetically. And so they're relying on that antiquated structure for how things should be in order for them to be great again, so to speak. Or
well, part
or
of it
right,
is I think
know?
it's a remnant of our biology as it's a part of our primitive brain. And mm-hmm. it's helped us survive as a species in, you know, eons of the past. But as mammals who survive on forming relationships with each other, we're not lizards living alone in the desert anymore, mm-hmm. right? So we need to figure out how to cultivate a sense of family, a sense of belonging in our interpersonal relationships. Otherwise, we will not survive.
Right. Like you need both, right? Yeah. Like you need, look, there's great things about having that dominant energy. It's going to get you far. Like competitiveness is going to help, you know, advance at making advancements in new discoveries or in being faster in different races. Like, you know, there's a light side and a shadow side to every trait and characteristic, you know? So it's not like one thing is again, good and the other thing is bad. It's just what happens when it gets out of balance or you're only relying on one or you're deciding that only one way is the good way or the right way and everything else isn't, you know? And I think that that's one of the ways that I see that divide between there's people that think that there's only one way and this is the right way and this is how it has to be. And then people that are more open to lots of different ways and just being curious and being open and creative and wanting new structures to come around and new ways of doing things, knowing that the best is always yet to come.
One concern that I always hear from people in relationships is, this is a really funny one, is how do I get my schlubby husband to work out? It's usually coming from the wives, and they're usually asking gay guys they see going to the gym. And part of me is like, you know, it's almost impossible to change another person's philosophy or behavior on fitness and exercise, but it's very easy to change the way you think about exercise. And sometimes all you can do is work out yourself and hope that your spouse will follow along.
Yeah, I think that's one entry into it, where another way of saying that is, first of all, you can't force anybody else to change. They have to really want to do that themselves. And at the same time, anything that really like bothers us in another person is generally a flag in about something in ourselves that really needs addressing or being looked at.
Like, and so why it's can't like, you be in, why can't you have six-pack abs because I can't have six? You know what I'm saying? Like, and I see this, like Mark and I talking to each other even about our bodies is like, we're always like wanting the other person to be in better shape than we are ourselves.
Well, it's always easier if they do all the hard work instead of you having to do the hard work, obviously.
Well, it's like, we're not able to go to the gym anymore. So you're sort of your homeschooling equivalent of working out now. And it's for a lot of people who a lot of our listeners have never homeschooled. No, have no idea. They think of homeschooling as like, you know, where hillbillies or rednecks pull their kids out so they can pray 24 hours a day. But I was homeschooled for 3 years by very progressive parents. And I was like in collectives where art teachers and writers and you know, people involved in the humanities wanted their children to have a different type of upbringing. And for me, it was like the first problem was the idea that when you're isolated from a social environment, it's very hard to get things done. And fitness or, you know, organizing your kitchen drawer or doing anything when you're at home during self-quarantine is everything is slower, you know?
What is time anymore? What day is it today? I have no idea.
And it's like, it's distressing when you see these celebrities, you know, being like, my personal assistant isn't here. I don't know what day it is. Like Katy Perry said that. And I was just like, girl, you have a watch. You have a phone. Open up the calendar.
I have a Facebook group called the hashtag Quarantine Wives Club. And one of the women posted a couple days ago that she celebrated Easter. Like her family full on thought it was Easter, and they had like the whole celebration and everything. And then she realized it wasn't. And then someone else posted, "Oh my God, me too."
That's hysterical. You know, so Easter, whatever, for the least those that don't know, it's coming up this next Sunday, not this past Sunday.
I'm like, I'm Jewish, and even I knew that. God.
Well, I think you have Passover coming up, and how are people?
Yeah.
You know, people said to leave an extra Zoom window open for Elijah on your on your Seders.
That's a good one. Although we might be hacked. I think that everyone's getting hacked on Zoom now by pirates and all that. I just wanted to circle back to something that you were saying about your partner and wanting them to work out. Another trick that I learned from my relationship and that I teach all of my clients is, instead of focusing on the way that you want your partner to change, you can start right now treating your partner like the man or woman that you know that they can be, like their highest and best self already, and just really, you know, relate to them and speak to them and highlight all of the amazingness about them and build them up and inspire them in that way to always be their best and to act as if they are, you know, that their highest and best self that you can always see in them. Because a lot of times we all know this, right? We are our own worst critics. Like, we stand in front of the mirror and pick ourselves apart and analyze ourselves and think how we could do better. And, you know, it's hard for us to see that best version of ourselves. But what if you had a partner that was always seeing that in you and inspiring that in you and bringing that energy to the relationship? That is an amazing, amazing hack.
So you're saying fake it until they make it.
That is one way. That is absolutely one way. You know, and then think about it then again, like as you're visualizing the greatness of your partner and everything that you know that they could be, or even that they are, but maybe it just hasn't materialized or embodied itself in their day to day. Are you showing up as the partner of that incredible person? Right. Mm. Like I had a client that was upset because their partner is sober, and they said it was fine for for this woman to like have a drink with her friends, no big deal. But then they got really upset, and she was like, but he said it was fine, you know? And it's like, okay, great. But like, you know, you have a partner that's struggling. So is it more important for you that you are having your drink with your friends, or is it more important for you that you're this a partner to this man and that you're giving him the support that he needs? Or you're thinking one step ahead that maybe he said it was fine, but that, you know, he was doing it for you, you know, so that you could be happy. But really it would be, you know, it would be such a gift to him and a real partner move for you to act in a different way. Again, there's no wrong or right, right? It's the choices that we make and the outcomes that happen. And so those are just always decisions that we have and options that we have when we're creating or co-creating our relationships.
Well, like Zac Efron said, that he'd rather be happy than be Hollywood shape again. And then part of me is like, you know, this is an interesting quote, because actually I think it speaks to a lot about the relationship we have with our spouses or partners, but also the relationship we have with ourselves, that we put ourselves onto unrealistic or difficult pressures because we're trying to please somebody else. Zac Efron said, "It was really important for me at the time to do that Baywatch film because I realized that when I was done with the movie, I don't ever want to be in that good of a shape again."
Wow.
"It was so hard. You're working with no wiggle room. You've got things like water under your skin that you're worrying about. I mean, come on.
Wow.
Making your 6-pack into a 4-pack? Shit like that? It's stupid.
Yeah.
I'm just happy that I got me through it."
I never had to think about that ever. I think I'm on like my 18 pack right now, actually. So,
well, part of it is like, you know, if it's not fitness, it's productivity, it is engagement. Right. And I think, you know, that intensity, I think for a lot of, you know, you work with some very driven women who are just like, they are, I don't even know what type of personality it is because I don't follow that stuff, but they're the captains of their teams at work and in their communities. And being in a relationship with somebody like that can be very difficult because they're holding you as their spouse or the partner to that same standard.
Right. And what works at work when you're managing your team, when you're building a business, is not necessarily going to get you the results that you want at home in your relationship, in your romantic life. So again, there's nothing wrong with having that energy, right? Like being driven, being successful, being an amazing manager, being decisive, being bossy, like standing up for what you believe in, like speaking your truth, super, super important. And at the same time, you know, is it giving you the results that you want when you're with your significant other? Like, is it, are you being a good partner? Are you utilizing those resources in the best way when you're with your love, you know?
Well, and Michelle, you run a business with your husband.
Oh yeah.
And so how do you like navigate or balance those two things? Because it's like, you know, there is a need to run that business, but then you're like, well, we could also just, you know, stay in bed and eat cheesecake.
Which we do sometimes too. And that's called balance. You know, and look, for a long time, I didn't do a really our business success bled into or like took over the success, quote unquote, or the happiness of our relationship. And I, again, I realized, right, like there were unhappy moments or times when I realized like things weren't working for us, you know, and we had to have a come to Jesus, so to speak, or, you know, we really had to look at each one of us and what we were doing to create those unhappy dynamics, you know, and why we weren't getting the results that we wanted or needed. And so, you know, if it's just in terms of business versus relationship, again, balance, right? Like making sure that we stop working at a certain time, that, you know, when we have meals, that it's not talking about work, like when we're with our daughter, that it's family time. It's not just like a continuation of our day, but then energetically too. So, you know, we have different rituals, so to speak, where, you know, we do our ritual, we do our thing, and that's a definitive moment where we, you know, put away the work business partner relationship, and now we're in the husband-wife relationship. So taking intentional actions so that it's just like, okay, I'm leaving that part of my life, like that's done. Now we're in this part of our dynamic and being very conscious about that.
Michelle, you named your podcast Radically Selfish.
You did your research on me.
Which seems like you know, flipped everything you've been telling us. Or is it? I mean, in a sense that are you tricking the women that you're trying to guide into not being selfish by sort of tempting them with this idea? And I notice this is a struggle of balancing second wave, the right to workplace equality, with third wave feminism, which is sexual and relationship and racism equality. Is third and second wave feminism is always kind of at odds with each other, and part of that is that this idea of women living according to their desires, no matter what circumstances, can be a very difficult place to be when it comes to addressing sexuality and inequality.
Okay, how many questions did you just ask me?
I just gave you like a, you know, 50 years of feminist history in 5 seconds.
Okay, so here's the thing, right? Like, I don't feel like I could be saying what I'm saying now if I hadn't taken full advantage and really ridden hard on the selfish train and did all the things that I wanted to do and really, like, enjoyed the fruits of labor of every man or woman that came before me that helped me to be in this incredible, incredible place with all the privilege that I have, with all the opportunity that we have, like with as much more work that has to be done. You know, countless untold people did the work, did the labor for us to be in this place where we can have whatever we want or be whoever we want to be or do whatever we want to do. Now, that being said, the ways that that all of those different waves of feminism needed to operate were according to an old blueprint, right? A blueprint of winner or loser, right? Men versus women, like the battle of the sexes, you know, like men need to step back so that women can step forward, you know, like that there's a loser in this, like that men need to give up control so that women can have control. Like there's a huge battle that's been raging. And what I see starting to happen is a big taboo, actually, a big feminist taboo, where like I think one of the biggest secrets for a lot of women is that they actually really like when their men are in control in certain aspects, right? And again, because it's a choice, it's not because they have to let go of control because they have to be weak next to their men, but there's something that feels very good for a lot of the women that I work with about letting themselves lean back, about letting somebody else step up and have that kind of power and sharing that kind of power. So what I see actually is instead of like a great equalizer, it's really about each individual. And I'm not even going to, you know, go with genders or anything like that, but looking at each person, what their individual strengths are and what they bring to the table, and just understanding that maybe we'll actually never be equal because we're all so unique and what we have to bring is different. So how do we bridge that divide? How do we come together with all those differences and create what we want instead of trying everyone to be the same or everybody, you know, having to have this the same kind of standards or the same kind of energy? So I see a real like new shift that's going to be happening. I'm not going to call it a new wave of feminism necessarily, but with that freedom comes the choice, you know, that if we're talking about feminism specifically, that like for women to be allowed to want whatever they want and not to be shamed for it. And so for the women that want to let go of control, for the women that want to feel like their partners can have that kind of power with them, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
So I'm starting to see a lot of thought leaders like you instead of, and I think Tristan Taormino also wrote about this as well. Instead of seeking equality, what we can do to move ourselves forward is to look for complementary relationships.
Yes, that's the word I was thinking about. Exactly. Complementary, 1,000%.
And so, you know, and I think actually in workplace dynamics, if you can find yourself a job where it's diversity is seen as an asset, because everybody in that workplace environment, in that relationship, or in your, you know, romantic interpersonal relationships, it's that diversity that allows you to overcome things. And I think, you know, for same-sex couples, we're often criticized. Mark and I are criticized all the time because
we're twins.
We look like each other. But people who know us know that Mark and I think about the world in very profoundly different ways, and we solve problems in very different ways. And I think that's our strength as a couple, is our ability to see things and deal with things differently.
Yeah, I agree. Like that's partnership, right? Yeah. Like if you think of a business partnership, you want somebody that you're working with to have strengths and to see things that you don't, right? You want somebody on your team that is mm-hmm. bringing their own experiences and their own skills. And in a way, you want them, at least in some regards, to be stronger than you, because that means that they're going to help to carry that burden. They're going to be taking the responsibility on their shoulders too, not just you. So that was actually when I had that realization of like, actually, I think I want my husband to be stronger than me. Like I realized how much of my ego was getting in the way. And my pride was getting in the way of me having the relationship that I wanted with my husband.
But I mean, are you talking about cardiovascular strength, flexibility, endurance, balance?
I guess
strength, you know, is relative.
Stamina.
It's you
know? I mean, but I guess it depends, right? It's for every dynamic, for every relationship, business, personal, it'll be different, you know? Yeah. So maybe I'm an awful runner. Maybe I'm in terrible shape. So yeah, maybe I would want my partner to have better cardiovascular than me so that he could run when it's the apocalypse to the store and get the non-dairy milk that we need, you know, because I'm just not going to be able to do that, you know?
You know, I always tell people, is like, because they always think, he was like, oh, women are so weak, or, you know, not as strong as men. And I said, okay, you're a dude, identify as male, or you have a assigned at birth male body, lie on the ground and lift your legs up to the side like Jane Fonda did. You cannot do 5 sets of a minute on each side without burning yourself alive. And for some, for a lot of women, it's an actually very easy exercise to do because women tend to have much better hip strength than men.
Right.
And I learned this actually from a fitness coach who was a woman. And she was telling me that, you know, when we think about strength, there's so many different ways to measure that, that we always think about muscle or we tend to think of brute force, but there's, you know, flexibility, there's balance, there's so many other things. And it's like, and we want to develop all those attributes in ourselves individually. You want to cultivate that masculine and feminine and non-binary energy that
exactly
into your lives, you know?
Yeah. And I wasn't even thinking about it in, you know, when I say energy or strength, like I'm not only thinking about the physical manifestation of that, you know, it's like the skills that we have or, you know, the ways that we think about things or see the world, like, you know, it's looking at all different parts of us. And when you're thinking about strength, and it's so different and individual for each of us.
Michelle, I was want to thank you so much for taking some time out of your busy day, sharing letting your husband share you with us
on his birthday.
On his birthday.
Guys, such a pleasure.
Yeah. Well, what's your husband's name again?
His name is Dan. He's my slightly younger man. That's right.
Oh. Happy birthday, Dan.
How much younger?
just a couple of years, but I'll take them.
Yeah, our guest today was, I don't know if you're familiar with Hattie. She's a 84.
I think she said, told us she was 81.
In another interview, she said she was 83. So, but she's in her 80s, and she says regularly she has dating and relationships with men in their 20s.
She's oh my God, I don't even want that. No.
Silver cougar.
Well, now she's dating guys in their 50s, but not too much older than 50.
Yeah. So she, part of it is like, you know, it's about creating space to invite change and unusual relationships in your lives. And to me, it's like, I really appreciate you coming and talking about how to think about our relationships differently and be open to growing with the people that we're closest with. I hope that we all come out of this crisis as better people.
Yeah. You know, what I'm telling my clients, what I'm telling the women in my Quarantine Wives Club is that this is the relationship retreat that you never asked for.
And you're stuck with it for a while.
But you can make the best of it. You always can make the best of it. And having a bad day or having a fight doesn't mean that it's bad. You know, that's just another thing I say. It's another effing opportunity for growth.
Amen, sister. Michelle.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Thank you. What a pleasure. Thanks for making my day even better.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Michelle Kanon lives in Brooklyn, New York. Check out her podcast, Radically Selfish, where she talks about the journeys of powerful women living according to their desires. Mm-hmm. Yes, honey.
We all need some survival tactics to get through this quarantine, living alone or living with a partner or a roommate, and some people multiple roommates. And,
or ourselves.
You know, and people who have roommates that aren't adhering to quarantine, and you're like, oh no, they're bringing in stuff every day. What's happening?
How you been, Mark? I mean, I know we taped this podcast, and in some ways we're really lucky because it gives us an opportunity to sort of like check in and interact with each other. It forces us to interact with each other. But in terms of your like mind space, how are you doing?
Well, I really miss going outside with the dog and taking him to the lake because that was kind of my alone time and get a chance to get some exercise. I miss going to the gym, getting out of the house. Those things are hard. But, you know, I mean, it's, you know, we live in Chicago and the winters here can be pretty rough. So a lot of times we're used to spending time inside and you and I are used to living together and working together.
It's been smooth for us.
So in some ways it has been kind of smooth. But, you know, I do miss going out. I do miss seeing people.
Part of me is I am a bundle of nerves. I don't know if I'll be able, like where our money's coming from in the future. A lot of our jobs and sources of income are shrinking or disappeared altogether. So it is with great anxiety that I meet the days ahead. And I'm very grateful, even more so now, to have somebody like you in my life. Aww. To be able to hold my hand and navigate these very difficult and uncertain times.
Well, we're very lucky to have each other, for sure. And we're very lucky to have an audience who knows us and supports us and likes our programming. And, you know, we've been working at home for, you know, this is our 16th season of Feast of Fun. So mm-hmm. for 15 years, you know, we've been here at least part of the time working from home.
I hope it's not our last one.
I hope so, too. I want to remind folks we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus or join us at Patreon. Patreon.com/feastoffun. And our store is wide open at feastoffun.com/store.
I was watching the Swiss Family Robinson movie from Disney from the 1960s that has the hunky young actor James MacArthur from Hawaii Five-O. He plays one of the Swiss Family Robinson boys.
Yeah, the oldest son, yeah.
The oldest son. I was like, ooh, he's great. And to me, it was really interesting, the dynamic between the family, that until sexuality became part of mm-hmm. that dynamic, they discover this girl who was also marooned on the same island.
Dressed as a boy.
What a coincidence. They seem to be getting along with each other. And even the mother said, we have everything we need right here. and it's interesting.
And they didn't even have toilet paper.
They had no toilet paper. They were trying to, you know, and I know they ate some of those ostriches and zebras. Mm. They were in some mythical land that was, where they're off the coast of New Guinea?
New Borneo or something like that. They had zebras, elephants.
Tigers.
Everything.
Ostriches. I was like, what? Is this Africa? Is this New Zealand? Where are they? But I thought it was a very interesting film to watch at this point in time, just because of the fact that it's this fantasy about being isolated with your family and sort of cut off from the rest of the world. And then when the rest of the world comes rushing in, which I don't want to give away the film, that's where all the conflict starts to happen. And then the film kind of wraps itself up really quickly. But I think the appeal of the Swiss Family Robinson and why Disney built those pavilions at Disneyland and Disney World was that it was really fun to imagine as a kid this idea of isolating yourself from the rest of the world with your family, with your loved ones, mm-hmm. and be able to be cozy. You have a word in Norway called higgy. What is higgy?
Higgy is a sense of coziness that you can create in your home. So you can light a candle, put on some soft music, relax, read a book, watch television, socialize with the people that are in your home. Just a sense of comfort and well-being, but intentional. You're intentionally going about it.
And so part of it is that we want to invite you guys to create a space in your home, in your heart, in your life to be cozy, to cultivate love and compassion and sharing that love with yourself, most importantly, and the people that you're there with. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to fuck your roommate. You know, but, you know, do something nice. One thing we've been doing is we've been baking a lot of bread.
We've been making bread every day because, you know, listen, medieval diet was basically that's what people ate. They drank beer and they ate bread.
And they lived to the age of 30.
No, some people lived to be a very long time. Of course, they would have other things. You could make soups and things like that, and you could eat other things and things that were in season. But for part of their diet, you know, that's what it was.
Yeah, and so, you know, make some soup, make some bread. A lot of people are becoming amazing bakers mm-hmm. as a consequence of this. And I'm very proud of our listeners and people who have been sharing photos mm-hmm. of their baked goods or their culinary masterpieces at our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/feastoffun. Mm-hmm. And you can go there and you can interact with the listeners, the people who've been on the show, and you know, have a more conversation. We want to thank you guys so much for listening to the show. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye, everyone. Bye.